retire, and they've been promised, they remember that they were going to get a little time out of the line. They hadn't had it. And casualties were heavy, and, you know, some of them be getting reports from home about things going wrong in their families. So, anyway, I wrote this report. It went up to brigade, of course, and they all read it, and it went off. Brigade officers read it. They sent it on to division. And then I got a call that I was to report, not to division, I went to Corps. Never been there before in my life. And so I was to, was held up, hauled in before them. They all claimed that they knew who'd written it. It was, I was firing somebody else's ammunition. I said, no. That was another padre, who was a good friend of mine. No, I said, I wrote it myself. It's mine. And then there's a judge advocate general there. He was sitting in this, you know, they had those mobile homes things that they had as offices. And had the brigade padre beside me, and he wasn't, the divisional one and the corps one, and they weren't much help, I felt. They kind of felt beleaguered, you know. So they said, oh, this Jack said, I know more than you obviously, your that regiment of yours isn't as you described it, and I knew them. I said, I've been with them now a year, more than a year and a half, and I know them too. Well, he said, then they're badly led, and I said, that's not true either. And, you know, he was, oh. So I stuck to my guns, and I thought they're sending me home. I was sure as shooting, I thought I was going to be sent home. So anyway, went back to the regiment, and the RSM, old Frank Fisher, oh, he sent me off saying, well, it was a good try, don't we'll see you home, you see. And I got back, and all I said, I'm still with you. And about a week later, they gave us a week's leave in Ghent. Now, I don't know whether the two go together or not, but it's one of the myths, I think, of the battalion. But anyway, we had a week off. Yeah, that was one of the... So it just went on like that, though, but it was... to try to... I just kept that. I was in it, and there I was. And got a little bit of leave now and then. Not very much. And... there was nowhere to go much anyway. I think I got back once the padres had a sort of a conference of two or three days at Brussels or something. And so we kept on until the war finished. And that was kind of the routine. It changed a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. The kind of warfare changed. We moved more. But for as far as the padre is concerned, it seemed to be fun. And I used to decided too that I was, that I'd observe Sunday, whatever, possible, somehow. Publicly, so I'd have a managed. Once we got into Normandy, they began to say, "Paddy, we're going to have a church service," and they said, "You know." So I used to very soon after a couple of weeks, we managed to quiet enough. Like a company, some of the company come back under some trees and have a short service. So if I couldn't have a service in the front line, to go back perhaps to F echelon or to brigade where I had some responsibilities. Mm-hmm. I don't think I missed a Sunday after I'd started this. And because I thought it was important that that was, after all, I was representing something, and so I did. Right. And so that kept on until we finished, and we had a service of Thanksgiving in a Lutheran church in Germany. Yeah, that's it. Mm. But that was, I got a bit of advice from one of the officers, I've forgotten his name, who was being sent back to here to BC soon after I came, an older one. And he was driving me in his jeep somewhere in England, somewhere around Mount Scanlon, I suppose. And he suddenly said to me, he said, "Padre, do you know what the troops look for in a padre?" And I said, "No, I wish you'd tell me." He said, "They look for a spot of holiness." So I kind of remember that. And I think I know what they mean. And so I didn't, you know, you're not to be just one of the boys, and yet you are one of them. Mm. You have to, you want to identify, you must, but you're trying to hold on to represent some kind of faith and goodness and whatnot in the midst of all this. Yeah. I didn't often try to interpret the ways of God to man. That was pretty hard to do. And occasionally I'd try to use some illustration or some particular occasion that seemed to help it. But we weren't very much concerned. We weren't sort of... I didn't feel you're asking what the chaplain's role was, whether that the padre... I don't think many of us felt that, God was on our side and those were the devil. We felt that we were fighting something which was pretty bad and needed to be defeated. But there's, as far as I can see, there's far less it was a job that had to be done, and we didn't feel particularly self-righteous about doing it. And I know I remember once saying, look, you know, you feel, you know, you were killed and their friend was killed and you weren't, and you're killing people. And I remember once trying to say something about, well, if I can't secretary why you and I are still here after this battle, and Bill and Joe isn't, but I said, perhaps God's got some work for us to do, so we better get on with it and do the best we can. Perhaps we'll go home and be able to do something. And then on the other side, I say, look, if there's any, you know, sin and fault in killing people, I share just what you do. I don't fire a gun, but I share just as much as you do. I'm part of the common human situation that we're in. So that's what the rest I ever could do.
Yeah.
So
about the just the men fighting, did you notice any change in their religious attitudes?
Oh yeah, they were more open. Yes, I used to quote a saying to them. I used to say to them, the devil was sick, and the devil a saint would be. And the devil got well, and the devil a saint was he. Anyway, we had fun on that. No, they would want to. They said their prayers more than they, and they want to see you, and they want.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, they were glad to have a church
yeah.
service of some kind. That's right.
Uh-huh.
Yes, that's right. And they, I never know. I don't know whether they kind of got to like the padre because he was the gospel or something or other, or because he was sharing it with them. I don't know. I think it was mainly because we just were there with them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you shared with it and stuck with it and weren't blaming them all the time for things, that they probably decided that. And perhaps that's how you represent the, God anyway, since the Son came to be incarnate. And so I don't know, that's going a little far,
mm-hmm.
but something like that. So. Was they then? Of course, I've always been fascinated to find the number of church wardens and people who have come out of the ward. I think it's possible. Of course, they were young men, but they're not all that young. So, I guess that's about it.
Mm-hmm. How was the attendance at your Sunday services?
Oh, well, it varied entirely by according to what was going on. And
mm-hmm.
During there, they would always have 20, 30, 40 from a company,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And perhaps half a dozen or ten of them might want to make their communion after a little short communion service, which is part of our Anglican tradition, which I felt, well, I continue that. That's part of my responsibility, so
mm-hmm.
to do that. Mm-hmm. Occasionally we get a big service, and after giving this little... I couldn't give you exact attendance unless I looked at my little book, which I haven't got, my little journal. But my recollection was that when I'd hold a service for a company, there'd be probably up to half of that company would be there if they were free, you know, but it depended so much on situations and a lot of other things, and sometimes also on whether the sergeant major was encouraging to them or not. And I think this is where I better tell you one story. There was a particular sergeant major, company sergeant major, was well known to them, Powell's, and he was a pretty tough soldier, but long history, others would tell you about it. He'd, at any rate, he'd been a sergeant, and he'd lost his that rank, and he came back to the unit, and they said, do you want to go back to your unit? And he said, yes, I'll go back as a private. And he landed on D-Day as a private, and he soon worked his way up, because he was a natural great leader. Anyway, one time, I hadn't thought of him, he wasn't the most religious one. So one time I noticed when I got to his company, because the sergeant major had a lot to do with, you know, like, you know, to tell him the padre's coming and when, and so, and apparently his words ran like this. He said, the XYZ padre is coming up to give you your Jesus ration. Now, if he cares enough for you, XYZ, you'll be there to get it. Rather nice, though. I the phrase, to get your Jesus ration.
Yeah.
So anyway, Bill Powell, they used to turn up perhaps more than others. I never knew. I don't how they got there was not my concern. They were, whatever was there, I dealt with that. You know, so there were varieties of company, and you know, it all depended very much. Oh yes,
mm-hmm.
But certainly when we finished up at the very end, and there's no the CO who's still here, of course, Colonel Larry Henderson, figured we'd just like to go to church and say a little Thanksgiving. So I went to the Lutheran pastor. This was in Germany. And I didn't, you know, it was a kind of an awkward situation. You'd just finished beating them, you know, they just armistice or whatever it was. And he didn't have too much, he had enough English. So I went to see him and asked him, you know, I wasn't demanding as the conqueror. Anyway, I said, do you think it would be all right? if we'd like to have a service in your church, and we'd like to return thanks that the war's over. And he said, I said, you know, if it's all right with you and your people, could we use your church? And he said, yes, of course you can. And he said, he I don't know whether he slipped in behind or not. He wasn't just sure whether that would be a good thing or not, from either point. Anyway, so we went to church that morning, and I guess everybody turned out.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a very bit of thanksgiving and remembrance of the ones that went there. Yeah, that was, so that finishes that side of things, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, part of your duties is sort of dealing with this battle fatigue, and then, well, could you see it coming, sort of any telltale signs?
Well, I wouldn't, under the best circumstances, the sergeant would notice that, or somebody would notice that he was a bit withdrawn, perhaps, or
mm-hmm.
various things.
Yeah.
And reluctant to get to move forward, you know, and that sort of thing, which is very understandable. And it would get back to the MO, and we'd send them out. Well, sometimes there are fairly severe cases of where you'd have to send them back. They used to call it the First World War shell shock, and what term they had for it in this war. But I wasn't too smart about it. I learned more about it when I finished the war, and a week later I was given a book by a friend of mine who was an Army medical officer and also a neurologist and a psychiatrist and whatnot, called by Lord Moran, called Courage and How It's Used Up. And it was written by Lord Moran, was the physician to Lord Churchill, in those days. And he'd also was the physician in chief to the Air Force. And he'd been a medical officer in France in the First World War with the Contemptibles. And from this he'd put together how it was maintained and how it was used up.
Mm-hmm.
And every person had a breaking point, no question about that. And any kind of, we tried to get a man before he broke and gave him a chance to recover.
Mm-hmm.
But not too many. I don't think our proportion was very, was pretty modest. Because, and I think largely because we were pretty well led. And we're also, they still maintained enough of their togetherness, even though they got reinforcements from all over as time went on, yet the regiment could quickly absorb them. Get a few days and rest, and you know, get everybody cleaned up and march around a little, not very much, just enough to get them feel. But I was very, I felt the Canadian Scottish were just very good on this one. They were very good. We never had a disastrous battle. I think if you get a disastrous attack in which you're thrown back and overrun, that takes a little while to get over for anybody. Well, we fortunately never, we had some one or two bad attacks. But we survived them without, we lost a couple of attacks, we lost whole companies, but not as severely as many of them might have.
Mm-hmm.
And so we managed to get through that without too much trouble. I know sometimes, I remember a captain who was getting very nervous. See, he's fairly high strung anyway, and he'd done very well, to my mind. And he came back from Leopold, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
And whether he's still alive or not, he may be. I won't mention his name. Anyway, he came back with a bullet hole through his neck, just missed his jugular, you know. Happy as a lark. He'd done it, you know. He didn't know he was going to manage this battle. I know he didn't. He just didn't know whether he could do it. And here he gets this, and he's done it, which is interesting. You know. It was a close call, but I haven't let anybody down or myself. I don't have to do it again. So that's the kind of thing I think makes this sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that would, and very much, you know, you got a group of six in a section, if they're good friends together and support each other, that helps. See, that all those are little things, but those are essential.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they get time to get a group there, and if they can support each other. But of course, if this one person gets in trouble, they may often say, tell the sergeant or the corporal something, you know, Bill so-and-so, really, he can't, you better leave him out of this one.
Right.
And sometimes they could do it, sometimes they couldn't. You couldn't always do that, but you certainly wanted to. That's about it. Yeah.
Was there any sort of person or sort of personality that you found most often?
No. No, I wasn't studying this as a psycho.
Right.
No, I couldn't answer that. I don't know whether they got a profile on one back at in the field hospitals or wherever, I don't know. You could, you'd have to go to another source, because I was a simple padre. And I, you know, I had a smattering of it, and I didn't take any courses in psychology. Nobody goes through university hard enough, all sorts of, but I wouldn't say, I couldn't tell you that. Don't think so. Don't think so. You couldn't say, oh, he's going to be or not. Not, of course, old Lord Marnham said that a man of character in peace is a man of courage in war. He said that war doesn't change you, it exposes what's in you, which is a tough saying, but I think he's right. That a person of integrity in peace is going to be integrity in war, too, you see. It's a fascinating little book.
Yeah.
Fascinating little book. But that was one of his sayings, that too, that the war has no power to change, it merely exposes what is in you for all to see back to. And he also said that the courage of a nation, the you know, the honor of a nation is always in the keeping of a handful of people. Yeah. So, it's a very interesting study, though. If you ever find it in the library, you'd read it in a couple of evenings. Just a little book. I'm sure it's long been out of print. But I read it just after the war, and just after I finished all these things, and I could see it, and I could see what he's talking about, because I'd seen it. But I hadn't put names on it, you know. I hadn't diagnosed it so much and put it in categories. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I know I'm taking up your time here, but maybe just one last thing. Any outstanding incidents you remember? Just maybe something off the top of your head. Something really outstanding.
Well, I think most of the things that you remember, you see, are the humorous ones and that
right.
sort of thing.
Or humorous.
And in many ways, I guess the D-Day landing was a kind of a high point to get ashore and to move inland and that part of it. Then there's one incident which I often remember, two of them. Both have to do with my Batman. See, we had a Batman in those days, and he was your driver, too. So when we were getting into the Falai Gap area, we were putting in an attack without really quite enough preparation, which sometimes happened, and we weren't even sure where our field ambulance group was, the collecting post, the next one behind our own. And I managed to scutter on and found one. It was belonging to another formation, but they said, yeah, we could take them in. I said, we don't know where ours is even. The MO doesn't know where they are. So when the casualties started to come in, I filled up my Jeep, you know, stretcher cases and others, and started to drive where this was on top of a ridge. And the German was on the other ridge. And he started to fire his 88s at us, you see. This was a little, you know, one behind and one in front, and poor old rear driving, he said, what do? I said, you drive like hell. so we got ahead of the next round and we were safe. But that was one of the, but that's a very, that was, and the other one, which was, I like too, is of another Batman I had later on. And this time we'd been kind of busy, it was later on in Germany. And we'd been had, there'd been intermittent attacks we'd been putting in, and we've been going around a little, and I've been bringing up back some wounded, and it was more fluid, you see, and you needed more. So during the course of the day, poor old Klein had about three shrapnels, bits into tires, that changed two or three tires. And come evening, things were quieted down, and I said, Klein, I think I'd like just to go up and take a look at Baker Company. I don't know how they got on. I'd just like to see them and see if they're all right or something. Klein took off his helmet, and he threw it, and I said, I quit. So I said, well, Klein, you know, I know how you feel, but I don't think either of us can do that, so come on, let's go. So we drove up, and all was well. But I've always liked that. I chuckled over that for a long time. That was it. So, but that's the human side of it. Sure, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
But I could understand him wanting to quit, poor fellow. Yeah. Don't blame him. He'd been in the line quite a number of months, and he posted back to me for a little break in this sort of thing from the rifle companies, and then what's he find himself? So anyway, so we laughed that one off. He didn't get court-martialed on that one, no. So that was one.
Yeah,
those two. That do for?
Yeah.
Yeah, those two were quite fun.
Uh-huh.
Another one was when we were crossing the River Seine, and it was the first time the Germans were pulling back nicely, a nice hot August Sunday morning, I remember it well. And they were pulling back well, and the Army had decided this was the time they'd send the battalion across on field engineers going to bring up their little boats, assault boats, and they put an outboard engine on them and just wide enough you could run a jeep on it and or a Bren gun carrier even, and so on. So all the red tabs were up from the engineers, you know, everything, nice quiet morning, and all the battalion went across, one after the other, jeeps and troops and everything, no problem. Finally came the Padre's jeep, last of all. So on it went, in our little boat, Batman sitting up in the car. Well, it was a nice morning, and after we got about halfway out, he thought he'd get out and walk up the bow. Well, all he did was put the bow under it. So the engineer at the back tried to rev it up and lift it up, which of course just put it down faster and further. So I lost my jeep, and we all found ourselves floating in the River Seine with grabbing at my bag here, you know, and I had a tin box which was floating there, and two old Frenchmen were rowing a boat up and down looking for loot, I guess, or something. And the river is kind of full of odds and ends which we won't mention. So anyway, I'd better get to shore. So I started to swim. It was not a great distance, a nice warm day, and the other fellow, the engineer, is obviously all right. And I looked to see my Batman, and he was in trouble. I mean, he would not be able thrashing about, not be able to swim. So I grabbed a hold of his collar, and we got ashore. And I said to him, I said, I thought you could swim. Oh, yes, sir, I can, but I just couldn't get my balance. So after I'd done this, the word got around, several things came out of that one, as you could imagine. First of all, they said, you hear the Padre's turned Baptist. He's had a total immersion. And the other one was, they said, you know, it's too bad, the Padre's gone insane. That was good for about a month, you know. So those are the things which make life worth it, you know, keep things going. So that ought to do for a close.
Yeah, great.
Fine.
Thanks a lot, Bishop.
Very welcome.